Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bexter, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Unusual moment alert. I'm home, alone. I know, pretty crazy. I'm probably on borrowed time. Kids are about to get home from school, but I'm just enjoying it. I could happily have another couple of hours if I'm honest. There's just something very luxurious about being in a quiet house and thinking of all the things that I could do. And actually, the thing I have been doing is going through my to-do list. I've decided I needed to write a list. I normally don't write anything down. And last week and the week before, I did, I think maybe 5 or 6 podcast interviews. And when I do them, I don't write down any questions and I don't make any notes. So basically, I have like a little part of my brain at the front. I always feel like it's the front. Might not be. In my head, it's in the front. And I shove in there the information that I need. And then I retain it for that while I'm doing the interview. And then I sort of try and get rid of it to make room for more things. But sometimes I can't get rid of it, so it just has to squish up and make room. So the 5 people I interviewed over the last 2 weeks, I still remember a lot of the details, but it meant that I didn't have any information about anything else for a while. So I was being really forgetful. I was being really behind on stuff. I was being really washy. And it wasn't a very nice feeling, to be honest. So I've sat down for the last couple of days, just trying to go through my to-do list. I'm just looking at my goldfish and he kind of looks dead. He's not dead. If you have a goldfish, does yours do that? Just sometimes just sort of stay very, very still. And I think, oh, it's funny because our goldfish got really distracted, haven't I? Our goldfish is actually, I think he's coming up for 4 years of having him. And I thought that was amazing. And actually is quite amazing because he was the result of a magician that came around for my son Kit's birthday nearly 4 years ago. And the magician made this goldfish appear in a wine glass of water. So every year I've been messaging the magician going, he's another year older, this goldfish. It's amazing. And the magician, Maximilian, will write back saying, that's amazing. And I thought I'd done really well until I Googled the lifespan of a goldfish. And it turns out they normally live sort of 10 to 15 years. So now I'm not feeling quite so smug. I think it's just the ones that I won at fun fairs when I was a kid. Just didn't really last that long. So actually, our goldfish is just doing all right. He's hoping to last another decade. Thanks so much. What else is going on? Just sort of tour stuff, getting my head ready for that. Planning the set list, go on tour in March, and I'm planning on changing the set every night, which my band are obviously thrilled about. Great, they've got to learn loads of music. I've got to learn loads of lyrics, but basically I want every night to have a slightly different feel because I want to have a sort of wheel of fortune, a magic wheel that we spin, and on it are about 26 different songs, maybe more, that are a mixture of my singles and covers that I did during the Kitchen Discos. And wherever it lands, we just got to do it. And we're going to do that a couple of times during the gig. So, yeah, got to have all that under my belt, my virtual belt. And I've been going to, I went to the tailors last week to get started on the costumes for the tours. That's fun. And I've got a birthday in the house next week. My second one down is going to be 13, so planning his birthday. It's really sweet. He wants to go to a water park, an indoor water park, and go down the tunnel slides, which I think is really adorable because I'm pretty sure, although, you know, I might be proved wrong, pretty sure he won't be doing that when he's older. Maybe he will. Maybe he's going to go swimming with his mates every birthday through till his 30th. Who knows? This week's guest, thinking of water, nice link. It's a rower. Yes, a very impressive woman, Helen Glover. So Helen will tell you her incredible tale. It's pretty awesome. I feel I should put a caveat at this point that having your baby and then re-qualifying for the Team 2 row for Great Britain is highly unusual. What she did there is extraordinary. Please do not feel useless if you have your first baby, or like Helen, three within 2 years, and don't manage to get yourself Olympic fit within a year after that, because I know that I didn't manage to do anything like that after my first baby or my second baby. It just, well, even now, I don't know why I'm dating it. Like, I'm only an Olympian now. It's still something that hasn't happened for me. But what I'm trying to say is it's an exceptional thing, born out of exceptional circumstances, which was lockdown. But what I loved about her, and I, you know, this comes from all the best people out there, is that what happened to her is just something that she wants to use as an example to empower people and to push them and to make them feel good. She knows what she did is extraordinary, but she wants everybody to know that, you know, there's possibility if you have the desire and the passion to make something happen for yourself. Don't listen to the naysayers, folks. So that's Helen, who very sweetly agreed to do my podcast after I essentially gave her no choice not to. I saw her giving a talk, and I said, you have to come on my podcast. What you're talking about here is perfect and very exciting. And she said, yes. So thank you, Helen. Thanks to you. And I will see you on the other side. So where are you in the lineup? You were part of a family of five.
Yeah.
And where are your second one down? So joint second
oldest. I've got an older brother. I've got a twin brother myself, and then two younger sisters. Yeah. Big family.
So when you then, because you were telling me just before we started recording that your eldest sibling one up is the same gap as your eldest to your twins as well.
Yeah, so he was about 17 months old when me and my brother were born. Mm. And Logan, our eldest, was 17 months when we had our twins. So yeah, I honestly have been on my phone to my mum every 5 minutes going, well, when do you take them swimming? How do you do that? And where do you put the twins when you take Logan here? And things like, because, you know, she's actually been there and done it. So it's actually really a great resource for me.
And can she remember?
Actually, she can. I think
wow.
through...
That's impressive.
I think some of it through seeing the twins and Logan, my three, it sparks back those, oh, this is what I did with you and your brother.
Yeah.
This is how I did it then. And I think she remembers through, it kind of, it brings it all back to her.
That's funny. Because also I think the age your little ones are now, so three and two, it's a really visceral age. So actually, you know, for your mum, when she sort of feels the weight of the twins and all that kind of thing, it's like, oh, yes. And, you know, I feel like this age is very, like, it's a very tactile stage of raising kids.
Oh, totally. Especially, definitely in our house, I think we're quite a huggy household, and so yeah, there's lots of like, and especially the boys have started a love of wrestling, especially, so there's wrestling and hugging, and yeah, like you say, you pick them up and you feel the weight of them. And my parents live down in Cornwall, so there are sort of time slots that go by till they see them, and the first thing you do is they run up and you pick them up and you go, you've grown. You can really feel them growing every time.
And Cornwall, is that where you grew up as well?
It is, yeah. And I always kind of thought that maybe by now I'd be back there, but I think life kind of keeps you different places, and yes, we're in Berkshire now.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? The bits of childhood you think you carry on, and then as you say, like, other stuff happens, but maybe you've sort of mimicked some bigger themes from your childhood that are there.
Yeah, definitely. And we, things like, I thought I want to be in Cornwall to grow up by the sea, and actually we're not in Cornwall, but we're by a river, and so things like that. I've always thought I want to be by water, and I want a big family, and I've got three children, we're by a river. And so, you know, I do think there are things that I thought I wanted, which have happened in different ways, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And going back to when you first had your first baby, what was going on in your life then?
So when I had Logan, it was very much kind of, this is the plan. I had just competed in the Rio Olympics. 3 weeks later, got married.
Wow.
And then decided that, you know, now we're going to start trying for our family. I left rowing, retired, and didn't know what I wanted to do career-wise, but knew that family was going to be
first.
So
this is back in 2016, is it?
So 2016, I retired, and then by 2018, we had had Logan. It definitely took my body quite a long time to normalise after finishing being a full-time athlete. Kind of even things like your period coming back, which I shouldn't have lost it in the first place, but with the amount of training, I wasn't having periods, and I was kind of, my body was just equalising for about a year. And then we had Logan in 2018, and I was sort of being full-time mum, at the same time trying to get as much kind of to supplement my kind of work, because I had lost my rowing at that point. I was doing speaking arrangements and things like that to feel like I had that part of my life as well.
Mm.
But I loved being a mum, and it surprised me because I guess I had been really focused on one thing and really selfish in the pursuit of rowing excellence for so long. Becoming a mum is almost the antithesis of that. It's you're second to everything. You are now planning everything, the structure, your life and your body and your health is coming second to something else. And so it was a real shift in the dynamics, but it was a really refreshing shift for me. I realised, oh, actually, and didn't sit that comfortably with me being so intent and so selfish for so long, and it was time to do something a little bit more selfless.
Well, that's interesting, because I would imagine that, you know, for every female athlete that does that same shift, they have their own very personal relationship with that change in emphasis. And being so focused, because you talked about the change in your body taking a year, but there's also all the mental stuff as well. When did your sort of training and all that, when did that start in your life? How old were you when that was taking such dominance?
So I was always sporty when I was younger. And I was like things like on the running team, tennis, swimming, and really quite good naturally. It never went any further in terms of kind of, I ran for England when I was a junior and I was a very good hockey player. But I think partly because I grew up in Cornwall, I was really far from centre of excellences. I was away from the bright lights in big cities. And being an Olympian, being an international athlete, is something that belonged to other people. I didn't even consider that it would be part of my world.
Mm.
Just no way. It was so far removed from me as a kid. And so I went to uni, studied sports science, and actually became a PE teacher. And it wasn't until I was 21 that I even started rowing. And that was because London had been given the games, and it was 4 years before London that they were looking, there was a big talent ID drive looking for people to go into different sports. And I applied, I got tested, and I applied based on the fact that I was tall. They were looking for tall people. I was tested and I was told you could be a good rower. And I was 21, picked up a new sport in order to go to the Olympics, or try to get to the Olympics.
Wow, yeah. I didn't actually realise that. That's an extraordinary start.
So it was much later. So I think most people expect you to start when you're 10. And a lot of people do. A lot of people start when they're at school. But it was really exciting, actually, to think I could start. I didn't think it would be possible to start something later in life and still make it to that pinnacle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I was part of the people that thought that actually if you're on that trajectory, it has to kind of come in pretty much from hitting double figures, and it's really intense from that time on. But I wonder as well what that means when you've had a life outside of it for that time before.
I actually think that's a big part of why I had success, is because you can look around you in the changing rooms and go, this has been, the people I'm rowing with, this has been their life for 10 years. And I do feel like there's a sense of the life experience that I had helped me. The feeling that I held no resentment towards rowing and what it took away from me, it was only giving me something, a potential opportunity.
Yeah.
So I was really lucky to have kind of lived a lot of life through my teenage years and had enjoyable times that I wouldn't have had if I was just training and just competing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, being a young athlete, being exposed to lots of different training and exercise, meant I wasn't going, even though it looked to the outside like I was going from zero, I was actually going from a really full tank of experience, just not in rowing. So it definitely was the first shift in my mindset that I've had, because it was the first time where I'd gone, this is it. It's the first time I've ever applied myself, to be honest, to anything fully and wholeheartedly. And I really enjoyed having something that was an obvious target.
And was rowing something you actually really loved from the get-go?
No. To begin with, it was my vehicle to get to the Olympics. The Olympics for me had always just seemed just incredible. And to get there was the thing. And I would say for a long time, if you'd asked me if I loved rowing, I would say no. It took me a good few years to start to love it. It was fitting it in with work. I was teaching at the time when I first started rowing. So it was just, I never asked my question, am I enjoying this? And it's really strange now, because if anybody says to me, what's the key to being a good athlete? My first thing I say is love what you do. But the reality is you don't always love it. And to begin with, I learned to love it, you know, and to begin with, it was just hard, but a vehicle to get me where I wanted to go.
Well, I guess as well, it comes down to how you interpret where the passion is coming from. Because if the rowing in its actual self is not the thing, but the challenge, the drive, the discipline, the goals gives you all of that, then that's the bit where you're getting the 100% love.
Even if I wasn't loving every stroke of a session, I love getting up in the morning and thinking, I could go to an Olympic Games, and that bit I loved, yeah.
Yeah. And do you think you love rowing now in a different way?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I love where it's taken me, but I also loved the period. Okay, so it was also my most successful period, but the period when I was on the team was I found one of my best friends in my rowing partner, Heather. I found one of the most inspirational men I've ever met in my coach, Robin. And I got to spend my days with two of the most amazing people rowing in a boat to dream of winning an Olympic Games. I mean, by that time, I was the luckiest person in the world and I loved it, yeah.
Mm. I suppose as well, there's having that team in that way, not every Olympic sport, Olympic athlete has that. That's quite as bespoke to rowing, isn't it?
It is. It's a really unique bond because it's not a team of 13 people, but it's not a solo sport. It's me and one other person. And so the bond has to be there, the respect has to be there, and you are living, you're training in a boat together, and then on training camps you go and sleep a metre and a half away from each other in a hotel room. You know, everything is shared.
Mm.
And I think that was a big strength for me and Heather's, because when we raced and it started to hurt, I can honestly say I wanted to win more for her than I did for myself. You know, she, seeing her, what she put in every day and not mucking up for her sake was so important for me when we were racing.
Yeah, that's really significant, actually. And when it came to, is when you're doing something like that, is there always the subtext of conversations that at some point the rowing will stop and other things will happen? Is it something that's spoken about?
I think something is changing and shifting in that world, because for me, I thought it was a strength of mine that I didn't think past rowing. I stayed so present and so intent on what I was doing. I never considered life outside of the sport. And I thought that made me stronger. And then you leave the sport and you realise, no, I should have thought about this a long time ago. And actually, when I finished after Rio, I did a little radio mini-series called Life After Gold, where I interviewed some ex-Olympians and Olympic champions. And they all said the same thing. When I left sport, I suffered a loss of identity. And it was there's a really big issue with sports people finishing.
Yeah.
You know, retiring in your 30s.
I know.
And then having a life to live where you've potentially gone and done the most amazing, exciting thing you're ever going to do.
Yeah.
And having to work out a whole new identity without coaches telling you where to be, what time, without waking up and thinking, this is so exciting, I've got this to train for. Sense of identity, that kind of loss of a goal, you're almost mourning for that day-to-day thing that got really exciting. Now there's much more of a conscious effort within sport to help athletes think about what's next, prepare careers, prepare emotional support, which I think is really important, because not only are a really small amount of people actually going to achieve what they want to in sport, but there's a lot of people who are going to go through sport, get spat out the other end, and then think, what now? And it's a really hard one to answer.
Yeah, I'm actually completely fascinated by all of that, because my brother's girlfriend is a ex Olympic snowboarder for Russia, and she's spoken a lot about that and how what happens afterwards. And I imagine that when you're in the midst of something that intense, having those conversations almost feels a little bit like you're letting something in you're not even supposed to be thinking about right now.
That is exactly right. If anybody tried to talk to me about that,
yeah,
I would feel like that's energy in space
exactly.
that I can deal with later.
Yeah.
Right now, I felt like I was giving myself the best chance by dedicating everything to the here and now to make sure I achieve the goal. And you also have this totally, I now see it as unrealistic, but I had this firm belief that all I need to do is win the Olympics and then everything will fall into place. I'll never be sad again. I literally thought, I'll never be sad again. I just need that thing. And so you dedicate yourself to that thing. And then you realise you can win the Olympics and be sad. You can win the Olympics and have bad days. You can win the Olympics and have nothing in the calendar and work out what you're doing with your life. You know, there is never as simple as you believe it to be at the time. But yeah, I definitely felt like dealing with any questions about what's next was not in my interest right then, which
yeah,
it's tricky. Because I could, even knowing what I know now, I could go back to a young rower and say, you really need to start thinking about what's next. But I can totally see why they wouldn't want to as well. So
yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, I suppose some of it is just about being given permission to have a little bit in your head that's for you on the other side,
yeah.
in another way. So on that sort of, that you know, in your the way you've been handling life for so long, when you found yourself deciding that now's time to start a family, were there conversations you were having with other athletes about that? Or was it much more like outside of that whole world by then?
Yeah, it was definitely outside of that world by then. I think because I'd finished the sport and I'd walked away, so there was no conversation or question about me ever coming back or anything. So it was something that was privately done. When I, you know, had Logan, it was just... One interesting thing that I realised was that up until the point of having Logan, if I was ever doing an interview, the question would always be raised, oh, are you going to come back? Are you going to go to Tokyo? And the day I had Logan was the last time I was asked that question.
Wow.
So it was almost like it's just an unwritten rule is that, okay, as a female rower in the UK, you either come back or you go and you have a family or a career. And so, but I didn't think anything of that. I thought, well, now I've had a baby, that's my line in the sand of career done. So yeah, there wasn't much communication with the rowing world about it other than congratulations and Helen's now started a family. And yeah, so that was it really.
And how did you find the relationship with yourself physically with pregnancy and everything after you've been training it that way? Was it?
I actually quite enjoyed it because I think after Rio, I did feel a bit of pressure to be the athlete I was, but without training 6 hours a day. And it's really hard. And I almost realised now that I was turning up, if I had a speaking arrangement, I would turn up and almost be I'd be self-conscious thinking, oh, they're expecting a finely tuned athlete and I wonder if I look the way they expect me to look and I wonder if I've put on a bit of weight. And I didn't mind it myself if I had, but I just wondered if I was who they expected me to be. And I found that hard. And I found not doing the training hard. And I still felt guilty for not doing 3 sessions a day because it was just such a routine for me. But then when I got pregnant, I just gave myself permission for all those things. My body had permission to change because it was creating new life and I had permission not to train. And actually, I was handed this kind of allowing myself. And, you know, I wouldn't expect anybody to think anything negative of me because, you know, she's pregnant and her body's changing. And I celebrated it and actually... I felt almost like I'd been let off the hook a little bit with the kind of just allowing change to happen.
So by the time Logan is not even 1.5, there are suddenly 3 babies in the house. How was that shift having the twins?
The dynamic was really different because having Logan, I very much fitted him in very easily. He kind of came with me everywhere. If I did a talk, I would just bring along a friend. They would look after Logie in the background and then we'd carry on and, you know, do our day, take him out for lunch and things like that. And then when the twins came along, I think the first thing I experienced was massive mum guilt of always thinking, where do I spend my time? Who do I spend my time with? You know, just always worrying that Logan wasn't you know, going from my only child with all my time was now going to have shed.
And presumably that's something as well that happens, particularly when of mothers of multiples, because you suddenly, it's not like, oh, that's my newborn. So yeah. You've actually got to then think about newborns as well.
He's suddenly totally outnumbered by babies in the house.
Exactly.
But actually, I think because he was so young when we had them, he kind of didn't, it's almost like he didn't notice massively, because he's still a baby himself, really.
Yeah.
So it kind of washed over him. My husband was around much more because he travels away for work quite a lot, and he had planned a paternity period to be home. So actually, Logan just got more time with daddy, so he really enjoyed that. So he almost didn't really react to the babies very much. And I think we kind of had that at-home newborn stage where we just kind of were just in our bubble, just doing our thing. And then at the moment of them being about 6 or 7 weeks old, at the moment where you're kind of ready to start stepping out, doing things, trying to get back into a routine, trying to take them places, trying to take them out, we went into lockdown. So I actually never experienced, really, a newborn phase of having tiny, tiny twins and Logan, and having to go anywhere, having to do anything, because just as we were ready, we were told, stay indoors, and this is lockdown now. And so I feel like my experience with the twins is really different to what it would have been.
Yeah, and ditto probably for anyone who's had babies in that time, really, because, yeah, it's, as you say, you know, you're in your own little bubble and then, oh no, we're in an actual bubble.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So when did you first start thinking about getting serious about sport again then?
It happened quite slowly, quite organically. I remember when
I feel very slow from where I'm standing.
I know.
Twins had just turned two, and
it actually it was super quick when you think about it in real terms. But what I mean is there wasn't really a light bulb moment.
Mm.
For me, exercise has always just been quite a good way of getting my mental health at the best place it possibly can be. So with both Logan and the twins, the moment I felt like I could get back into any sort of exercise, I did. I just started moving my body and trying to do a little bit of exercise here and there.
Where are you finding that time, just in terms of?
Mainly when the twins were napping. Wow. So for me, nap time became just try to do a bit of exercise.
Which in itself is actually quite impressive, by the way, I think, because sometimes that's just to kind of sit down and splodge and, I don't know, go on Instagram or something.
which I did do as well. But yeah, generally I would try to just do something then. Mm. And then at the moment lockdown hit, when the twins were about 6 or 7 weeks old, that's when I first started thinking, okay, I'll just put a bit more structure into when they are sleeping. I'll get on the rowing machine. I'll do some more proactive exercise. It probably took a couple of months of doing that, twinned with the realization that this was not a 3-week lockdown, this is going to be a long-term thing. It's kind of difficult to explain, because even looking back on it now, I think, what was I thinking? Like, it seems ridiculous, and like trying to almost explain it and justify it does seem crazy, but at the time the world was crazy, and yeah. It felt like,
but also I think sometimes with the hormones that are in your system, they can make you feel kind of slightly supercharged.
Yeah, actually. I was totally supercharged. And I was running on no sleep, and it almost made me, like, even more hyperactive, if that makes sense.
I actually can identify with aspects of that.
Yeah, so I was breastfeeding the twins through the night, getting sleepless nights, getting Logan up in the morning, doing a training session. Normally, Steve would play with little ones, and then in the afternoon they would have another sleep, and I was ending up getting two training sessions done. And at the same time they changed the Olympic Games, so they moved the Tokyo Games, it was supposed to be that summer, and they moved them for a year, so I had a year to train.
So I'm trying to remember when they made that announcement.
It would have been kind of
sort sort of spring. It was quite springtime. Early on, wasn't it? Yeah. It was one of the first big things that shifted.
And for me, that was just like a red rag to a bull. Like, I just thought, this is so exciting. And it was so different to when I first started rowing, and it was like exciting because I could win the Olympics. It was exciting because I could have this big goal. I had done that and I had walked away from that. But now I had these three children, and it started to actually annoy me that since having the kids, no one had even thought for a second I could get back into sport. No one had even asked me.
Yeah.
And that just grated me. And then my youngest is a little girl, and I thought, you, when you're older, I never want you to even have a moment of doubt of what's possible. And all these things started building up, and every time I got onto the rowing machine, I would imagine myself getting back onto the team, and I would imagine my kids watching me and being part of the training. And I kind of said to my husband, look, if I did this, what would you think? And I think he saw it coming. I think he had seen, look, she started training. The Olympics has been moved. He did think it was a little bit out there. It was a very big decision to make.
Mm.
But I kind of came up with three rules, and I said, the children always have to come first. I have to keep on getting better, and it has to work for us in terms of I have to still be enjoying it. I've done this. I've walked away. I've won the Olympics twice. I don't need to do this again. So I have to be enjoying it. And then I thought, okay, I'll check in every week. If all these three things are true, I will just keep going. And I'm not going to think about the Olympics yet. I'm just going to, if all these three things are true. And all those three things kept being true. Mm. And I was genuinely surprised when it got to Christmas, 6 months into my training, 6 months before the games, I was shocked that I got there. And that was a big moment for me, because that was when I was going to start trialing to get back onto the team. It's when I was going to make the announcement about coming back. And I truly didn't think I thought within the last 6 months, one of those things would have dropped. And they didn't.
And at this point, you didn't have to make a coach or your rowing partner aware of any of this stuff.
I just did it from my living room. Wow. I just did it from my living room. And Steve watched my sessions and cheered me on when I needed, and took the kids out for a walk if I needed to do a bit of a longer training session. And I'd stop halfway through and breastfeed the twins and then do my last half hour. It was whatever made it work. And I think if it hadn't been, lockdown opened up the opportunity, because if it wasn't for actually being locked down at home, there's no way. I wouldn't have left the babies. I wouldn't have wanted to go into training. It was just possible.
Also, there'd be just other things you could be doing.
A different
style of life, really. This is just sort of, your life becomes a sum of much fewer parts under these circumstances.
Yeah. So it just became a really tantalising opportunity to be the first woman on the British team to have made a comeback into the Olympics after having children. To think about, and at the time I thought, I probably won't be able to do this, but I was excited about the fact that any mistakes I would learn would get the next woman that little bit closer. Mm. Because, you know, there's Anna Watkins tried to do it before me. She won a gold in London, had her two boys and attempted to come back for Rio. And she didn't quite make it onto the team. But, you know, in doing so, you learn that little bit more. And one of the biggest things she learned was that juggling and having to be working in a team environment on somebody else's schedule is really hard with a family. And here I was in lockdown with nobody else's schedule, nobody else to turn up for except for myself. And so it was definitely just made a little bit more possible. And the big question I was saying is, why am I doing this? Because you need your why.
Mm.
And it started out being for my kids and to kind of just show them something. And then when I made the announcement about coming back, it made me realise that it was much bigger than that. I've never really experienced the kind of parent community. I've never really been in with the parent community. And it was the first time that I felt its full force. And I was like, whoa, this is cool. And I think you hear a lot of negative things about parents and the way they can be about other parents and the way they can kind of be negative or judgmental. And I just experienced this wave of positivity and I was blown away. And suddenly the whole thing came about, I'm representing other parents. And one of the most amazing things that happened was we went to took the three of them on a little day out to a little farm trip, and it must have been in the space between two lockdowns. And I've met a couple there who said, oh, I just want to say I was at your Olympic final in London years ago, and it was amazing. And we had a little chat, and I walked away, and they called me back, and they said, oh, we just want to say thank you for what you're doing. And I was like, thank you. And they pointed to their little girl, who must have been about two, in the buggy, and they said, that's what we want her to see. And it just hit me in the heart, and it's just another reason to want to be doing that. And I got so many nice messages. A woman who had received a cancer diagnosis after having her second child, and who just kind of think, oh, I'm never going to get back to full fitness. I don't know how I can do it. And she said, oh, you've just made me want to get back into that first step to fitness. And I didn't think that me doing this one thing could influence somebody else's life like that. Mm. And it just meant so much more than the rowing did, that it kind of, even the attempt at making a comeback was going to affect anybody else, was really amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot broader than just about rowing. It's about, actually, I think the thing you said earlier about identity actually is a big part of it as well, because it's one thing to go from, you know, when you're retiring from an Olympic level, you said about, you know, a lot of people experiencing loss of identity, but also that can happen to people sometimes when they become a parent as well, and they can feel like they don't really know who they are anymore. So having this goal and something that's so defining and so high achieving is really exciting.
The thing that I think I tried to tread really carefully with it was, you know, on the outside, there's potential to go, oh, she's just like had a few babies and gone back to an Olympic Games. She's there saying, oh, everyone can do it. And I never, never, never want it to kind of look like this is what you should be doing, or, oh, if I can do it, it's easy. Because it's not. It needs to be remembered that this was a massive part of my life before.
Yeah.
It's, for me, the equivalent of stepping back into work just a little earlier than I planned. I think it's incredibly empowering. My body was different but stronger than it ever was. It really was.
That's interesting.
I was amazed at what my body was capable of after childbirth compared to before.
Wow.
And I just think it's partly because I've never been through so much pain, even as an Olympic athlete. I can say it was the most painful experience of my life. And so, yeah, one thing I never wanted to do is almost alienate or make anyone feel worse about what they were or weren't doing after having children. Yeah. I just think it's really important to share the message that this is just something that I've decided to do. And whatever you decide to do, you know, champion yourself, believe in yourself. It doesn't have to be that you go to an Olympic Games.
No, but I understand why you'd feel like you want to say that, because you don't want anyone to feel that, you know, that it has to be, you know, Olympics or bust. But I think actually when people hear it, you don't think of it like that. Mm. You think of it as about having the thing that's for you, and also just emerging the other side of, you know, with the little babies, and just going like, it's almost like the sort of extreme caricature of that way you can feel on the inside sometimes, you know, like hands on your hips, feeling strong, you know, feet planted strongly, like I've got this strength, I've got this drive, I've got a goal in my mind, I can see it, and I'm bringing everybody along for the ride with
exactly.
me.
Exactly. I'd love to bring as many people along for that ride as possible. And, you know, some days you emerge as a superhero, hand on your hips, like with, you know, fireworks blaring off behind you, and some days you roll out of bed and you feel like crying for most of the day. And it's not like every day is that superhero day. So many days are that really tough one, but those are the ones that actually are the truly admirable ones, because everybody who's going through those days and everybody who has a baby does go through those days. Those are the ones that you get to the end of, and you may feel like you've done nothing or achieved nothing, but those are the most amazing ones, in my opinion.
And when just so there's a bit of context, like for me, what does a day look like when you're doing that training? So we know, like, what shape is that?
So when you're on the full team without kids or anything, it'll be training every day. We'd get a Sunday off every 3 to 6 weeks.
And apart from that, it's 7 days a week, is it?
Yeah. Either two or three training sessions a day. So a three-session day would look like a row on the water, 7:30 till 9:30. Another row on the water or rowing machine, 11 till 1, and then weights in the gym in the afternoon. Between that, you've got things like video analysis, physio sessions, catching up with your crewmates and things like that. So it's a full day. And as soon as you get onto the team, you get a certain level of funding so you can train full time. And then as soon as you start medaling, you get enough money to live as an athlete full time without any other work. So I was teaching at the beginning of my career. And then as soon as I won my first medal, I was just full time training.
Wow. And so when you're doing that, when you get to that point, to the last 6 months, is that when it starts getting to that shape? Is that what?
That's your, if you're training on the team, that is your 4 year day in, day out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's full on. And it doesn't actually amp up too much before the games because there's nowhere else for it to go, really. Mm. It's kind of, you just need a massive endurance base as well as a power base. So it starts, you know, it starts 4 years out. But then with my training that I did at home, I started kind of just once a day, then twice a day when I could fit it in. Then probably it was about 6 months before Tokyo that I made it known to the team that I wanted to come back, that I started doing the occasional session in with the rest of the rowers. So from 6 months on for me, that's when it started to ramp up into the occasional three session day and things like that.
So is it quite unusual? Let's imagine you haven't had the babies. Is it unusual in itself that you go from starting training to qualifying for the team in that short time anyway?
Yes.
Sounds it to me.
Yeah. I think 4 years out of the sport, let alone three children, is a big thing, yeah.
Wow. Just taking a minute to take that on board. That's pretty mega, actually. And I think... Well, just well done. That's so phenomenal. Does it help that your sport is sitting down?
I think it actually does. Yeah. I don't think I'd have considered it as a runner.
That is amazing, though. And what's obviously the other people you're involved with. This wasn't with Heather, was it? This is with a new rowing partner. And she also was doing her own thing that was pretty extraordinary as well.
Yeah. So Polly Swan, she's an amazing, amazing woman. She rowed, she raced in the Rio Olympics in the 8, and then she didn't know whether to carry on or not. She's a doctor, and she decided to carry on to Tokyo. She carried on training, and then when the pandemic hit, rather than all the team kind of separated and went back to their homes, their family homes to train, and she, instead of going back to her home to train, she went and worked in a hospital through the pandemic. So a year before the Olympics, she's working in a hospital helping out through the pandemic. And then a similar time to me, about 6 months before the game, she went back into her full-time training. So, and then we kind of got paired together through circumstance, really, because she had had almost a kind of a rocky start coming back into the team, and I had had this kind of interesting route back in. So we were placed together to see if we were going to be good enough to make the team again. We were asked to go into a pair to race the European Championships in May time, yeah. So it wasn't quite a full year after since I'd started, and we actually won the European Championships together, which was a big surprise to both of us. I think I didn't think we thought we'd be standing on top of a podium that quickly, but we won the European Championships, and from then it was decided, okay, we'll take you to Tokyo together. So yeah, it was really exciting, and to row with her was just, especially because she had that story as well. I think I've got a lot of respect for what she's done. Yeah,
yeah, that's really cool. And I imagine, so by the time you get to Tokyo, just the very fact that you're doing those things did it feel kind of out of body, or did you feel very like focused?
It did feel out of body, and I think that's not just because of the way we got there, it's because the state of the world at the time.
Absolutely.
Everything was so up in the air. We didn't know whether we'd be going to the Olympics. Every day we almost woke up surprised that it was still happening. We didn't know what it's going to be like when we got there. Even when we got there, it was surreal, because rather than landing and shaking hands and having photos with people, you land and you walk in your single file bubble as not to have any contact. And so everything felt very out of body. I almost feel like it didn't happen because it was such a surreal experience. But definitely for me, when I got onto the plane the morning we left for Tokyo, that was me having justified all the hours of training, having achieved my goal, having on that first moment where I realised this could be my next thing, I thought, yeah, this is mission accomplished. Mm. Anything from now is a bonus, and I'm really sort of proud of that.
Yeah, I bet. And that must be a thing that sort of just stays with you forever now. That's like always there that you did that. And with the sort of concentric circles around you, so you're your siblings and like your mum, how was she feeling from the outside looking in? Was she ever worried about you? Like, oh, you're pushing yourself really hard and trying to make sure you felt okay if you didn't end up qualifying? And
yeah, my mum was one of the main people who actually said yes, do it. You don't want to regret this opportunity. Yeah. I think that we all saw this year as being, you know, what are we going to do in this year?
Might as well.
And yeah, exactly. It really was that feeling of might as well. And I think she thought, and rightly so, you don't want to end up watching Rio and think, or watching Tokyo and thinking, oh, I should have just tried. So she's always been championed me doing it. At the same time, she definitely has worried that it's a lot to be putting in, and then the potential of not making the team was always going to be high. So that she was kind of worried about that. But I think she, yeah, always just saw that it was making me happier, and then in turn definitely making the kids and home life happier. And so yeah, she's always been a big supporter.
Yeah, and for your friends, do you think they were kind of like, well, that actually kind of makes sense for the way that you seem to...
It was like classic Helen.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even though it's a surprising thing to do, no one was that surprised that I did it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so an annoying question, but an obvious one, is what happens now? What's the next thing in your life? Is the training still happening regularly at the moment?
I actually thought, when I came home from Tokyo, I thought, right, I'm going to just start training again, seeing how I feel about Paris. Because like I say, I was really surprised at what my body was capable of now. And then it just hasn't happened. Because I've actually come home, and for the first time since having the twins, who are now two, we were in a world of normality, a bit more normality, and I could take them to their first ever clubs and baby sensory and these sort of things. And I could take Logan to start a nursery and things like that. So my thought of getting as much training in as possible has not happened. And I'm definitely more back to normal life. But the whole thing has made me kind of look at what's important to me, what matters to me. The support from the parenting community when I first started was huge and made a huge impact on me. So now I'm looking at things like, I'm working on a project now with Cotswold Outdoor. It's called the Supermum Series, which is about ideas for getting parents out and about with their kids. And I think that something that lockdown has given everybody is this realisation that getting outdoors is really vital, really essential for parents' mental health, for the kids' well-being.
Yeah.
But also it can be quite hard. It can be hard to know what to do when you get out the door. So I'm just doing a series of about six ideas of what to do, things to make and do with your kids outside, how to get them walking, treasure hunts, building a bug hotel. And I think it's just really, I feel like it's a bit of something you can put out there, which I really believe in, and I hope other parents will just look at and think that's a cool idea. I'll do that with my kids today.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if maybe some. I mean, because you mentioned before not really feeling like you're sort of much part of the parent community, and sometimes when you find yourself a mum, you sort of look at from the outside looking in, you think, I don't really know if I recognise myself here, and maybe that's something that's like a club I'll just never really quite be part of because the way I approach things and where my background is totally different. And maybe by doing this, it's been a way of sort of finding where you settle in all that.
I think so. And I think also I quite like to feel like I know what I'm giving, what I have to give to that kind of community.
Yeah.
And so for me, that almost the love of outdoors, especially because my husband, his whole job and work life is based in the outdoors and getting outside. And I've learned a lot from that as well. And I've learned a lot from just having the children, a few tricks that I wish I had known earlier, and a few things that I think actually, just like when I said, if you're going to be the first woman parent to go back and row on the team, you want the next person to come along to have a bit more of a shortcut to it. The same with getting your kids outside. Anybody, any new parent or parent who's just looking for ideas, here's a shortcut to some great ideas to get your kids outside. And I feel like that's what I've got to give.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, I mean, without being trite, I wonder as well, is there an aspect of, because obviously a pandemic is something it's so huge and aspects of it really quite traumatic. And do you think some of the focus you gave to the goal of qualifying also helped cope with world turning upside down and
no doubt.
Worrying about
absolutely
your folks in
no
Cornwall?
Doubt about
and
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That hour I had on the morning on the river was just me in a boat, forgetting there's anything else going on in the world. It's actually the first time I had for clarity in my head. And I wasn't quite the old athlete, because the old athlete that I was 5 years before would have thought about every stroke, would have judged every stroke, looked at my heart rate. I was rowing along thinking about what the twins are going to have for lunch and what nap time is. But it gave me that clarity outside of the house in the time when we were all stuck in a confined space. It gave me back so much. Having that goal, definitely gave me so much.
And for someone like me who's never, I've only ever been on a rowing machine, what does it feel like when you're rowing like that outside and on the river?
Often when you're in the team environment, you forget to notice those little things. So when you're in the team environment, it's all about times, figures, stroke length, how fast the boat is going. And taking myself away from that and training in my own time, I was doing this for me, and I was really feeling my new body. My body was different, and I was appreciating it in different ways. And you're rowing along and you feel your heart pounding, and you can hear the blood gushing past your ears every time it beats. And you can, you know, sometimes you'll end a session feeling like you're going to be sick. You've pushed yourself so hard. But I think I was much more in touch with how I was feeling and how the water was feeling and whether the river was quiet or busy that day, and just a bit more in tune because I could be.
Mm, that sounds really nice. And I like the idea of having that time to think as well. I think that's endlessly a benefit when life is busy, particularly with little children. Just being able to have a moment. Actually, the idea of all the encouraging families outside as well is a big thing. What sort of tips have you been sharing? Because I would be keen to hear some.
So there's things like from how to build a den, how to build a bug house, taking them on a treasure hunt that you set up. The treasure hunt has been a favourite of ours because it's the only way we get our three-year-old to meet. He's really kind of interested in small details. So you go out for a walk and you will not go within a 5 meter radius.
Yeah.
And then so we set up little treasure hunts and kind of it gets him walking or going to the next point. And so that's been a good one for us. But what else? Fire making. Lots of things that I think some parents think are maybe just a bit risky with little ones, or, you know, nothing you have to be a survival expert to be able to do, basically. Just keeping it simple and not perfect. You know, the den Logan and I built fell down within 5 minutes. But, you know, it's about making it fun, enjoyable, just something a bit different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I think we've got quite a lot more of those, like nursery, forest schools, yeah, and that kind of thing. I think children make a lot of sense outdoors, don't they? They just suddenly, then they take away a lot of the boundaries of walls and doors and things and just put them in big open spaces where they can roam and use their imagination.
Definitely. And I think sometimes at this time of year it can feel so, I feel drained sometimes thinking about getting them out the door. Like, you've got to get them dressed and you've got to get layers and then you've got to work out where you're going to go and bring stuff so they don't get cold. But then every time you do it, you're pleased
once you're
you've
out.
Done it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. A similar story around here, actually. We're talking about going out with your children. So am I right in thinking you're making your house a fully eco house?
That's the plan, yeah. Okay. So we built it ourselves. We lived on a houseboat because we're by the river. We lived on the houseboat and built in the garden the house that we're in now. It's a wooden house. And, yeah, the plan is to be kind of totally off-grid eco house. We just need to kind of get the few finishing touches for that.
Yeah. Was that something that you'd spoken about for a while and just really liked the idea of?
It is, yeah, and didn't realise how stressful it was all going to be. Anybody who builds a house says the same thing. It takes longer, it's more expensive. Oh. But, it's been stressful but worth it. We kind of have our family home now and kind of feel like it's as responsible as we can be with it as well, which is
okay.
Nice. Definitely
That's
something
lovely.
That my husband kind of is very passionate about as well. So, it's been stressful, but we are
learning
glad we
curve.
Did it. Yes, learning curve.
Is it a bit like a Grand Designs experience where you stood there in the hard hats going, oh, I think the kitchen's going to be here one day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
And we never anticipated the kids being born and still having the houseboat. But Logan was almost a year, I think, when we actually moved into the house, which is actually cool because having one and being on a houseboat was not one non-moving child
say, yeah,
as well.
That's,
that's key
quite key, yeah.
So it was actually a really lovely way for start the first year, but I'm glad we moved out of that houseboat when we did, yeah.
When I'm picturing a houseboat, I'm picturing like something very, quite narrow and low ceilings. Is it like that?
So it was a wide beam one, so okay. Actually it was really spacious. And
okay.
I would have, if it was just me and Steve, I would have lived there for the rest of my life, yeah.
Oh, that's a different, how was, the water pressure is the thing I understand can be an issue with houseboat living.
Yeah, I showered at the gym.
Okay. Sorry, a very practical question there, but I guess that's what I've heard people talk about. But yeah, lovely and peaceful. And I love the way you're so connected to the seasons changing.
Yeah. And you literally get geese turning up at your door for their, you know, breakfast and things like that. It was really, yeah, you're connected to the seasons and connected to nature really, yeah, by being down there.
That's lovely. And I suppose it's funny because you must have gone from Rio to, right, I'm retiring, get married, and then find yourself not that long later on this houseboat, everything's very tranquil, very peaceful. What was the biggest sort of challenge with that shift, do you think?
It was definitely my sense of what's next. And that's then compounded by everyone asking you what's next.
And did you have any idea? I mean, obviously what's ended up happening doesn't sound like it's not...
No, I mean...
time in the planning.
Yeah, if anybody had said after Rio that I was going to go to another Olympic Games, I would have just not even seen a possible route for that to happen. You know, even in the year of the next Games, 2020, when the new year came in, I was about to have twins. Like, there was no conceivable way I was going to ever go to another Olympic Games. So, yeah, I was just really lucky to have this career where London happened and I'd only been in the sport for 4 years. And Heather and I won the first Team GB gold of the Games, home Games. I mean, I was just so lucky to have that in my lifetime. Really, really fortunate. And then we carried that on and to back that up in Rio. I just felt like I had almost this perfect career that I was leaving behind. And then you retire and you're 30. And I was just going, well, what's next? And I just had this true belief it'll come to me. It'll come to me. The next thing will come. And career-wise, it didn't. But family-wise, it did. And having Logan... I can really see why there's this kind of difference in lifestyle between athlete and mum, but it gave me just a real sense of completion. And I thought a sense of completion comes through winning an Olympic Games. I really believed that. But I had Logan and it was like, I could cross the finish line 100 times, but it's nothing compared to being a mum. And I wasn't really prepared for that sense of my life isn't about winning Olympic Games. It's about this tiny little thing that now is totally dependent on me.
Yeah. And in a way, it all starts over again because then they're there. Your new person is there. And everything that was before was the before.
Yeah.
You're like, what can I achieve now that they're here? What can I do that's part of this chapter?
Yeah, which is again why the Tokyo comeback was really nice because it's the only time that they would actually have been involved in my rowing career. You know, I'm sure they'll get older and they'll see and they'll learn about the fact that I had won these Olympic Games, but it was pre them, so kind of why did it matter?
Yeah, old news to them really.
Yeah, so to kind of think that they weren't just there for it, but they were my inspiration for it, I think hopefully will give them something.
No, that's really magical. But also I'm thinking it's really, you know, you were a big crossroad there because if you say that, you know, physically it took a year to kind of, whatever you call it, de-athlete or whatever.
Yeah, to detrain.
Yeah, to detrain and you're not even, you know, periods are taking a while. So you're not, when we're talking about wanting to have a baby, it's not like you could say, well, I'll keep training and also be doing that and see what comes along first.
For me, it felt like it had to be one or the other.
Yeah.
Because I had to kind of normalise my body a bit personally. I mean, for many other athletes, they'll be in different situations. But for me, it felt like it was one or the other. And because it wasn't a normal thing to do in rowing, you just wouldn't consider trying to be pregnant or having a baby at that point. So, stepping away and having to kind of think about something so different, yeah, I was left in a limbo for a long time. And I think I probably did apply that athlete mentality to wanting to start a family because I was thinking, right, this is it. And you can't just will it. You know, and I was there kind of with that, right, come on, I'm impatient. I am an impatient person. And for me, if I'm ever impatient, I have to just, you know, work harder, do this, do that, make it happen. And I was actually just having to relax and take my time and work out who I was in a world outside of rowing all at the same time. And I think my husband's probably very patient through that time. And I think I probably didn't realise that I wasn't quite myself through that first year. I think there were probably elements of me and the way I was that was probably quite difficult and quite unfamiliar to those around me. But I think that's probably a process that I imagine every athlete has to work through when they leave and are kind of thrust into a world of uncertainty.
Yeah, I do definitely think that's a fascinating conversation, that whole thing. And, you know, obviously you've got sport, people going after gold, but also, you know, the people like gamers. If you're a gamer at the top of your field, then by the time you're, I don't know, 22, your reaction times, it's over. What happens then?
It's crazy, isn't it?
All that stuff. Oh, I think about people who train as a, I don't know, if you're a concert pianist and that has been your, it's like, you're in a different... on a different path if you're very focused on something.
Yeah.
It's very reliant on that, and then there's an after.
Well, I was actually contacted after doing this radio series with ex-athletes. I was contacted by quite a few people who had retired, who said it really resonated with them. Ex-police officers, doctors, surgeons, people who were really defined by their careers. You know, what do you do? Who are you?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a police officer. And you can... to have an answer readily available when someone says, what do you do? Or who are you? I just think that it's quite empowering, and it's a very nice thing to be able to answer in one sentence, in one word, this is me. And then the day you retire, that's taken away from you.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter what your job is, your retirement. You know, retired school teachers I spoke to who said, yeah, what do I say I do now?
Yeah.
So, I think that answer... will come to people in different time scales and different ways.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to give yourself that freedom and that flexibility to let it come, and to not feel under any pressure to have the answer waiting for you.
No, that's very true, actually. And I think that parenthood is often a big watershed of that thing as well, of like, well, who am I now? Am I going back to that version of me? What of my life before is relevant? What do I carry over? Mm. Where do I want to completely start again?
I think it's made me think differently as well about how I answer the question right now about what I do, because I think I now say with total pride, oh, I'm a mum. And I think when I had Logan and I wasn't rowing at all, I probably would have gone, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, and I've got Logan, and I almost tried to justify what I was doing at the time. And now I just feel really happy saying I'm a mum. And I think because I have the confidence behind me of having experienced being a mum and going back to rowing, being a mum and doing some speaking, just doing different things. And I now have confidence that the most important thing I'm doing is, no matter what else I'm doing, is being a mum. Mm.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting thing that we all have to think about, I think. And so just to clarify, so you were the first mother to qualify, to row for Great Britain, the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
And across the sport, how does that sustain? What kind of happens to most Olympic female athletes who then have become mothers? And
in other nations,
I'm really stumbling over how to ask this question. You know, I'm getting
in other nations, there's lots of people who have done it, and that I think that's down to the fact that the system is just, it's all about what the system is set up to do, and if a system is set up to assist women in coming back, then it's there for the taking.
And outside of rowing as well, this is something.
Yeah,
that,
and I think rowing as a sport does tend to lead itself to being quite tricky. It's time consuming. You are physically away. You're out on the water.
Mm.
Whereas if there's a sport that is less time consuming, you can be nearer your children. You could be, you know, in the same vicinity, even if it's something practical like breastfeeding. Those things are quite tricky to juggle when you're rowing and with the hours that you need to train for.
Mm.
But I definitely made more challenging by the fact that we have one training base. It's very traditional in the fact that you go in every day and then you're out of there by evening. It, with a family, the two just don't correlate really very well. And I think that I hope, from the conversation I've had with the coaches already, I've shown what's physically possible. I've shown that people could come back stronger. I've made it actually hopefully more appealing to get these people back into sport.
Mm.
And therefore you are asking the question, if we want these people back, how do we make it work for them? So I do think in future there's going to be a flexible system for mums coming back. There's going to be conversations about how to make it work for everybody, and that's just really exciting for me. Yeah,
that is exciting. And just to ask you as well, with the sort of training and your athletic mindset, how does that lend itself to raising three under three, or if they're not all under three, but yeah, three under four?
I mean, there are some things which I think, okay, Rowing's prepared me for this, you know, trying to physically go on when you're tired, you know, nothing kind of prepares you for that fatigue of parenthood. So trying to keep going when you're tired, I think, and just pushing on, I think rowing definitely prepared me for that. There's also something I definitely believe in self-talk. So the self-talk you need to do when you're training is all you're kind to yourself. You tell yourself the best things. When you have your best results, you tell yourself you can do this. I know it hurts, but push on. And you, self-talk is a really important tool for an athlete. And I think as a parent, you can get in that spiral of negative thinking or thinking you're not doing a good enough job or comparisons. But if you shift that on your head and turn an athlete's kind of mentality onto that, you think to yourself the good things, or my kid thinks I'm the best at reading this story, or I've done a great job today, or even I've remembered the lunchboxes today, you know, things that I'm really bad at doing. And I think the positive self-talk that I learned from rowing is something that I do try to take into my parenting. But other than that, I think that nothing can prepare you. I honestly think that your the lack of preparation for me was down to the fact that we know many people who had had children, and when they had talked about being tired, or I don't think you actually really listen, or nothing can prepare you for the reality. So yeah, I think it's just, for me, it was just learning as I went. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's basically what happens, isn't it? It's learning as you go. Plus you get whoever your kids are is like, they've got their own thing that's them, and then you have to learn all about that. So you can't really know till they're here anyway.
Exactly, yeah.
But I love that idea of the self-talk, actually. I think that's really, really true. I'm going to keep an eye on that with me, actually. I think you have that internal voice in your head, and it's good to make sure that she's saying nice things.
Yeah, and it's definitely, I think it's one of the biggest difference between, you can get two athletes who are physically the same, and probably the one with the better self-talk will be the one that wins, and the better self-talk is usually really quite uplifting to themselves rather than dragging themselves down.
Yeah. No, that's a good way to think about things just generally. That's good for, I can't really see how that would fail really, and to be a better way of approaching each day. I think actually, funnily enough, one of the really early podcast chats I did was a woman called Yvonne Telford, and we ended up talking about how I sometimes would go, oh, I'm such an idiot. I've done this, that, and the other. And she said, why are you calling yourself that? You know, if you say that, that's how you're going to see yourself, and that's what other people are going to hear you saying about yourself. I was thinking, God, you know, you've got to really keep an eye on those things. It's actually, they can be quite insidious, actually, how you refer back. And it doesn't really help you in the long run. So that's a good thing. And good for your kids to hear that as well.
I think so. Yeah, and I think trying to verbalise, especially now Logan's a little bit older, I'm a bit more aware of when I do go, oh, mummy's an idiot, or silly mummy, and all these things. And actually, I think verbalising the positives and the positive things is more like, you know, at that age, they absorb so much.
Yeah, little sponges.
That, yeah, if you're talking kindly about yourself, they'll probably learn those traits for their own kind of self-talk.
That's true. And also, happy birthday to, it's Kit and Bo, isn't it?
Yeah.
They've just turned two.
Sweet. Yeah. It's a really fun age. Yeah.
It is.
They're hilarious.
Yeah, completely bonkers, I find.
Yeah.
But really good fun. I have a Kit as well. It's a good name for a boy like it. Cool. Oh, thank you so much, Helen. Honestly, what an inspiration. I know that's a word that gets bandied around a lot, but I really mean it. I think it's, I really love the idea of that kind of, feel it in your veins, sort of a drive that you can get from new motherhood that I don't think gets talked about as much, but it's actually something you can really tap into. And it doesn't mean you have to be going for this, like, such a high achieving goal, but just things for yourself, just feeling energized and focused and feeling good about yourself and feeling back into that thing of identity and where you're at and having something that's yours, but also that you're kind of almost like the kids on your back and off we go.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
That's a good thing. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Pretty impressive stuff. To be honest with you, talking to Helen was one of those things where I sort of spoke to her, and she's quite, she does understand that what she's done is extraordinary, but at the same time, you know, she's been an Olympic athlete and an athlete in general for a long time now. So, you know, within the remit of her usual world, training her body and doing all those things is something that she's used to. So it was one of those conversations where I sort of forgot quite how extraordinary it was. And then it was really only after I'd, you know, was thinking back over our conversation later that I thought, no, hang on a minute, that really is amazing to be able to have your small babies and then get yourself to that level of fitness and that mental focus. Really impressive. And I did think it was really lovely to hear someone say that they felt stronger after having a baby. Because I don't know about you, but I don't hear that too often. So that was really nice to hear as well. That's actually pretty inspiring. I think we are very used to the fact now that most people talk about how all the bits of motherhood that are tricky and hard. And of course, that's important and good. But it's nice to actually talk about the positive things that can happen out of it too. So that's all good. So that was all really lovely. And thank you to Helen for talking to me about it. I found it really fascinating. And also, it's made me think a lot about athletes and about that culture that they have where within the time that you're training and focused, you're not really allowed to think about your life outside of it. You can't enter into the fact of what you might do later, because that'll feel like you're allowing in a thought that's not, you know, not helpful to your purpose at that time. But actually, it does mean that when you finish being at that level of training and fitness and competition, you know, what do you do then? There's a whole world out there. Anyway, I'm sort of rambling, really. I'm still alone in my house, walking around my kitchen. My cat Rizzo is looking at me. I think she wants to be fed. Do you want some food, Riz? Okay. And what time is it? I think I might have another cup of tea. Do you have a cut-off for what time you stop drinking tea? My mum takes a cup of tea to bed. I couldn't do that. That would make me wake up a bit too much. But I think tea any time before 6 is fine. I don't feel like it wakes me up that much. Maybe it does. I think I just really like it. And on that bombshell, as I'm about to feed a cat, I will bid you adieu. I know. It's pretty scintillating stuff, this podcast. You know, insights into cat food and time for drinking tea. It's just revelation after revelation. Yuck. Golly. Because I was holding the phone in one hand, I decided to open the cat food with my teeth, which meant that a little bit of cat food moisture went on my face, which I don't recommend. I probably should have stopped recording a little minute ago. We're in it together now. You've got that image in your head. Sorry. Right. I'm going to go and feed my little goldfish too and celebrate his 4th year of existence and talk to him about his plans for the next 11. And I'll see you next week. Lots of love.